Up next on the Canadian Tech Podcast, we look at the fallout of Apple dumping QuickTime for Windows, Mitel scooping up Polycom, and the Competition Bureau mostly clearing Google of any wrongdoing. That's all next, and more, on the Canadian Tech Podcast.
Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 68, for Wednesday, April 20th, 2016. My name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
Derek, again, once again, a ton of interesting tech news here, there, and everywhere from all over the web, all over the world, and even when we eventually get to my pick, all over the universe.
Yeah, it's going to be a good episode. We've got a wide array of topics to talk about.
And we also have, when we get to our sponsorship portion, we have a brand new sponsor, but we'll mention that when we get close there. Okay, first story. There is some signs pointing to, I couldn't believe this, OS X is actually, the original betas came out in 1999. That's hard to believe, 15 years old, and they've kept, you know, improving it and stuff like that. But there's some signs pointing that they may be abandoning that branding in favor of Mac OS. And this came to basically a page that was up about some environmental stuff. It was a landing page. Mm-hmm. And they mentioned, you know, in one of the things, and again, a sharp-eyed reader on the internet, of which there are many, it mentions here, are assumed to be 4 years for Mac OS, TV OS, and 3 years for iOS and Watch OS. And so, yeah, that kind of caught a few people. What do you think about this?
I'm personally not surprised at all. Everything since iOS has been something OS, and that's it. Obviously, there's a version number, but OS X kind of stands off to the side because technically the operating system name does not reference the platform, the hardware platform it's actually for. So this actually just really brings things in line with all the other versions of their operating system that they're currently supporting.
Right, exactly. And yeah, as I said, it definitely brings things into line for what they need to do. And again, it gives them an opportunity because, as I said, I couldn't believe, you know, we've had the same name for 15 years, which is several lifetimes in computing terms. So, you know, because, yeah, you eventually get to the point, you know, how many version numbers of the same thing do you need? And again, especially if they do some completely different things or some exciting plans they have. Hopefully we're gonna get a first look at the new operating system at WWDC in June. Mm-hmm. Hopefully some other different models, because again, I was looking at some other things. It's been a while since some new models were released, other than the 12-inch MacBook just had a refresh yesterday.
Yes, it
did. Slightly more faster processor and some awesome colors now, apparently, for those of you who like, and I know a few people who have rose gold on their phones, they could see this, and you can now get rose gold on your MacBook as well. So, yeah, interesting thing there. Okay, also to Apple, and more on the security front, it's been confirmed now. Years ago, Apple made QuickTime available for Windows, and it was usually bundled in with iTunes when you downloaded it. Mm-hmm. Well, Apple has officially ended support for that, which means no more security updates. And, of course, promptly, a couple of zero-day exploits have been released. So definitely, this is something you probably want to uninstall on your Windows machine. Yeah. Derek, any other comments about this?
Well,
oh, okay. Sorry. Should I get my popcorn?
No, not necessarily. A few commentators have made the point that there are other software like Adobe Premiere that actually rely on having the QuickTime codecs installed via QuickTime in order to support .mov, .qt file formats. So if you are running a Premiere or something like that for video editing, yeah, you're going to have to keep it around, or you're going to have to uninstall the software and then reinstall it when you absolutely need it and then uninstall it again in order to not open yourself up to this, which is obviously a huge hassle. Obviously, the solution is not to move to Mac OS X. That's a whole hard change that is, you know, completely unwarranted. I haven't had QuickTime installed on any of my devices in several years. I had no need for it. If I absolutely had a QuickTime file I needed to view, I actually had a VLC media player instead, which I don't know all the technical how software like Premiere, you know, actually looks for the libraries, whether they're looking at a specific folder, which is almost definitely the case, or whether they just do like a system-wide search for the right DLLs. But if you can, if Adobe actually can rework their software, and other video editors can rework their software to look for the libraries, regardless of which software installed them, switching to an open source media player like VLC, which includes libraries for pretty much every file format under the sun, and yep. video codec, that would be a better option instead of having to rely on QuickTime.
Just while we were looking there, I just double checked. There's some Adobe did do a blog post on the weekend, and they apparently are scrambling to find an answer.
Called it.
So exactly. You definitely called it. So they're gonna see what they have here. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna put the link to the Adobe blog up in the show notes so people can check that out as well.
Because that's good.
Yeah, there definitely has to be a solution. Probably code libraries or something like that.
Yeah, just include the DLLs if they can. It's probably DLL files because this is on Windows, or you know, work with the VideoLAN VLC open source community to bundle in the VLC player maybe, and that way you get all those libraries. That I might actually open up Premiere to a whole bunch of other video codecs as well. So that might actually be a good long-term solution for them.
Exactly. Now again, there is some interesting, I've got the PC World article mentioned as well up here. Mm-hmm. And there's some people in the design community have some pretty harsh words for Adobe because they should have seen this coming. And the question is, could you imagine if this was on the Apple side, on the Mac side? There'd be all, you know, as he quotes here, all hell would have broken loose.
This is actually
Chris Dickman, founding editor of graphics and design focused website graphics.com. He had harsh words for both Adobe and Apple. I love this. So this is a quote from him for Apple. It always seemed that the Windows version of QuickTime was designed by Steve Jobs to punish us. Bundled with iTunes for many years, annoying to install and update, unstable with crappy performance.
Yeah.
It really sucked. So along with many other Windows users, I deleted it years ago and my online life was immediately brighter.
I don't disagree with that assessment at all. Same with Safari on Windows. It's just not as good. And it's, you see somebody like Google and their Chrome browser use that as more of a gateway into buying a Chromebook. Why wouldn't you buy a Chromebook? Look at all the things you can do with Chrome on your Windows machine.
Yep.
You don't need Adobe software or Microsoft Office. We can do it all here via Chrome apps and Chrome extensions or websites. And in education particularly, Chromebook sales are off the charts. I'm sure that there are not nearly as many Chromebooks in people's homes, but Chromebooks are routinely the top-selling products on Amazon.com in the laptop category. And
and I know in schools and that the education market does very well, particularly in the States and in some third-world countries.
Yeah, so when you have the potential to have a gateway product like that, whether it's Safari or QuickTime, I don't know why you wouldn't invest a few extra hours into polishing up the turd that it is and making it work better on a separate platform. I'm still waiting for FaceTime on non-Apple devices. That's never happening, and I can't ask Steve Jobs directly because he's no longer with us.
Exactly.
But like, it's just extremely annoying to see a company be like, oh yeah, we're going to build it for this other platform. If you're not going to put in the effort to make sure it works well, don't even bother. Like at this point, they might as well kill off QuickTime for Windows, which they have stopped supporting, and Safari for Windows, and maybe even iTunes if you're not going to make it work well. iTunes is probably the exception because of all the other stuff it leads to and the revenue it leads to for Apple. But then again, that's every incentive for them to actually make sure it works well.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, we're going to have to kind of keep an eye on this and see what's happening here because, definitely those of people that depend on it are going to have to be really careful. And I'm sure because, you know, Adobe has a big Windows-based market. They're going to come up with something probably pretty damn quick.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, they don't have a choice.
Nope, definitely not. So, okay, so this next one's yours. Visual Studio Code Editor. This is a Microsoft product. It hits version 1 and has 500,000 users. You know what? I'm gonna make a confession here, Derek. I don't remember hearing of this, but I'm not a coder.
Yeah, well, so I heard about it through a web design focused newsletter. Why they covered it specifically, I'm not sure. Doesn't matter. This is really great for pretty much anybody who might have switched platforms and misses Visual Studio, or just misses the ability to work in a free, you know, high quality IDE. And I have actually installed Visual Studio Code on my MacBook Pro. Looks really nice. It's very minimalistic, I guess would be the best way to put it.
Okay.
It's certainly, a lot of the functionality is limited until you open an actual folder full of your, you know, your files that are full of code and all that. But, and it's nice because you can install all these little extra extensions to support some very esoteric languages and frameworks, and get all of the color coding and syntax matching and all that for those other frameworks like Ember and Angular, Laravel, Symfony, etc. So I've installed Python support because in case anybody saw my tweet earlier this week, I am head down in Python trying to learn the language really, really well so I can work on some personal projects in Python. And what else did I install? I think I installed one other extension for all the extra features around that as well.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of different themes on here and that. Yeah, it looks interesting. Yeah. So this is essentially this is a desktop based code editor. It doesn't run through a browser. Okay.
Correct. Yeah, it's cross platform, macOS 10, macOS 10, Linux and Windows. It's actually built on top of the Chromium browser and Node.js. So this is built using web technology to let you build web technology. HTML, CSS, and JavaScript as well, obviously with Node.js in the background. And there is an online hosted version of this called Monaco that you can deploy. And this is basically the desktop version. So so if you've used Monaco before, want the freedom to use it offline, go download Visual Studio Code 1.0. It's completely free, and it's also a debugger as well. So if you need some help debugging your code, this could help.
This is awesome, yeah, because I can certainly see, for example, in Windows, I use Notepad++, and on my Mac, I use TextWrangler. So in some ways, it'd be nice to have the same product across both things. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to download this and give it a whirl. So, good on Microsoft.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. Again, another name. I had my birthday yesterday, so I'm even more of an old guy. Thank you. I remember a couple of these names from way the hell back. I didn't even know one of them was still around. But anyway, Mitel buys Polycom for almost $2 billion. Tell me more about this.
So for the uninitiated, there's still a whole world of business telephone systems that are still in use. Cisco is a big player in that space. Polycom is also a big player in that space with handsets that actually sit on your desk. Mitel, certainly a big one. Panasonic and Toshiba, more so with small and medium-sized businesses. Avaya is a big one, and so on and so forth. So Mitel is actually an Ottawa-based company. They do pretty well for themselves. They absolutely have some really innovative products and technologies for teleconferencing, video conferencing, smart boards within your video conferencing, that sort of thing. I did a review about them quite a few years ago now when I was at Infotech Research Group. And to be honest, I had forgotten about them because they seem to play in the very, very large, multi-campus enterprise spaces more than anything else. And that's fine. They make a ton of money doing that. Mm-hmm. But Polycom is much more well-known, big video conferencing, really good speaker phones for audio conferences.
Yeah, absolutely fabulous speaker phones.
And if I had seen this acquisition coming, I would have thought it would have been the other way around, to be honest.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, you would think so.
Yeah, but apparently Mitel has come up with $1.96 billion U.S. To pick up Polycom, cash and stock. So not all cash, but in a cash and stock deal. That will create a company with about $2.5 billion US in combined sales, about 7,700 employees, unless they lay some people off, which they inevitably will, because that usually happens with this sort of deal. I would suspect one of the big reasons this came about was because they actually share a common and recent investor, a private equity firm called Elliott Management Corp, who had been urging these two companies to actually combine. And obviously the boards thought it made sense, and the shareholders must think it makes sense because it's happening.
Yep, exactly. And I definitely, for some of these older firms who, you know, had your PBX systems and stuff like that, you know, we've got the whole space is just changing because everyone, a lot of people are going voice over IP now. So these companies have to move with the time because you've got, you know, you've got everything from, you know, Skype, you know, Microsoft offers some solutions. There's a lot of different players now. Cisco, a lot of voice over IP. That's what I think of Cisco now for a lot of their voice over IP stuff.
Yeah, you see their phones all over the place, even at small. Even at some smaller businesses here in London, and certainly in places like Toronto and KW as well. I ran into a few. Disclaimer, I used to sell IP PBXs and traditional PBXs back in 2006, 2007 for a company based out of Hamilton. And when I was going around knocking on doors, business doors, I did not bother anybody at home. When I was going around knocking on business doors, I did run into a few Mitel systems, and for the most part, like, the handsets themselves looked pretty nice, but certainly a much more expensive option. However, you do get some pretty cool capabilities with those systems. So, good for Mitel. I mean, this is a good long-term play. This should help keep them in business and bring some of that money we lost. And some of those jobs we lost back in the early 2000s when Nortel cratered, bring some of that back to the Ottawa area and hopefully keep that area innovating and with lots of tech jobs as well.
Exactly. Okay. So we're about actually halfway through our story. So this would be a good time to talk about our brand new sponsor. And Derek, I think you know a little bit more about them than I do. So why don't you fill us in on the...
We'd like to thank our sponsor, Olio Digital Labs. Olio is a web development agency based in London, Ontario, with a highly skilled team of designers and developers. Olio can help any organization glean insights from its data, integrate multiple pieces of software or data together, or build you a great website to help your brand shine on the web. With a team that has done custom web application development for large retailers, built algorithms to help merchandising teams be more efficient, and built beautiful websites for small and medium-sized businesses alike, you can be sure that Olio can help you. Visit oliodigitallabs.com today, email info@oliodigitallabs.com, or call them at 226-785-0420 to start the conversation. And thanks again to Olio 2.
All right. Our next story is a Canadian bent. The Globe and Mail reports that Canadian watchdog, namely the Canadian Competition Bureau, the CCB, they've cleared Google of anti-competitive practices with one tiny exception. This was a three-year investigation they did because, you know, Google owns, like, you know, they control about 90-something percent of the search market in Canada. And this is kind of similar to all the hassle Microsoft had ages ago. And they're still, you know, they're still not out of the woods in Europe because the European Union wants to, there possibly may be antitrust charges coming in relation to its Android market. But basically, yeah, they were basically cleared of all the... things. There was a tiny thing regarding AdWords cost per click bidding, but sounds like they're going to be changing some things about that to make it a little bit easier.
So
this came back since 2005. The manner in which Google operates its search engine and search advertising platforms amount to an abuse of a dominant position. But the Bureau said it did not find sufficient evidence of a substantial lessening or prevention of competition in the market to support its other allegations. Another, you know, that's just a long-winded way of saying, yeah, they were fine. They weren't doing anything. Anything terribly naughty, or shall we say terribly illegal. Any other comments on this?
Not really. I mean, I'm not overly surprised. As someone who does look into my advertising options, quite frankly, I think there's too many at times. You know, it's hard to pick just one or to even pick just a few and figure out how much money or effort you should pour into one or the other. You know, when you're working on, for example, and I'll try to keep this brief, working on your personas, therefore who I want to market to, like who's my ideal target or your buyer, you know, and then how do I reach them? Yeah, Google's one way to do that, absolutely, and they have a lot of data to back that up. I'm being told that Facebook, for the right company, is actually a much better way to do that, and certainly their quarterly earnings seem to bear that out, that they're making a ton of money off of highly targeted ads. So that's, you know, and that's a whole billion plus people potentially that you could be targeting depending on what your product is and who, who the market is for that. Twitter has their own thing. Microsoft Bing has a similar advertising platform. I would argue it's not as easy to use as Google's, but it's certainly there. Yahoo, you can still advertise on. AOL. Like there's a ton of options here. So I'm not, I mean, I don't know the full nature of the complaints initially, but if I'm advertising with Google, I'm expecting my ads to show up on Google, and I have no control over what publishers, you know, which advertising networks publishers choose to use, whether it's the Globe and Mail or CBC or CityTV.com or what have you, or whether they choose to roll their own. Like that's entirely up to them. And if they feel like if Google's offering them a better deal or more of the cut from the advertising revenue, well, then that's up to everybody else to catch up or to offer something better or to be more innovative in how they do things. And like, well, we might offer you a smaller cut, but we're going to bring you a ton more traffic regardless. And you're still going to, so you're still going to make more money or what have you. There's 50 different ways to combat Google's technical capabilities, whether it's bring up your own or to just get, overall, just get better at what you do. So I'm not really surprised at all. I mean, in I've crossed 130 interviews with publishers, advertisers, handset manufacturers, the wireless carriers, etc. I mean, those are all the major stakeholders. So if if the Competition Bureau can't find anything illegal in Google's practices across 130 interviews since over the last 3 years. I mean, what more is there to say? Okay, you want to change the laws? Okay, get the laws changed. But until then, Google's doing what they're doing, and with the exception of the inability to connect AdWords to a competitor's ad network software, which is not personally not necessarily something I would expect, I could see why big advertisers would want it, but you know, otherwise, publishers would want it. I'm not surprised. Lucky for Google, I'm sure they're very happy to avoid X billions of dollars worth of charges. The EU has a completely different framework of laws around this type of thing, so. They're probably going to have to pay a ton of money over there, but that's because they have a different framework and different rules for abuse, monopoly, et cetera, and so on. So we'll see what happens over there.
Exactly. Okay. Moving on. As you know, last week we were actually one of the very first podcasts to break the story about about BlackBerry and the security. Just it kind of blew up just as we were going to air.
Yeah.
So that was kind of neat. But now we have Microsoft's going to be doing a lawsuit against the U.S. government over their what are they called? Secrecy orders or secrecy warrants.
National security letters?
National security letters. So basically what that is just for those who don't know, the FBI or, you know, your favorite whatever federal agency that happens to have three letters comes to Google or Apple or Amazon or Microsoft and says, you know, we need all the records from this customer. Oh, and by the way, you can't tell them that we're looking for this. Now, the main issue with with Microsoft is, you know, there's times where they might be justified in seeking a gag order because, you know, that way the customers won't delete everything or whatever. But the problem is most of the time they can't tell the customer even after the thing's passed, no charges are filed, things like that. So they had approximately, over the past 18 months, there's been almost 2,600 secrecy orders to Microsoft alone. And Microsoft saying it's the reasons for this is far, far too broad. And we seem to be seeing that. And so this is, you know, I think this is Microsoft. I'm sure this was in the process before we heard the BlackBerry news and possibly even before we heard the Apple versus the FBI news. But it's definitely a good time for them to bring that up because, you know, it's Microsoft saying, you know, part of my cynical side says, yeah, it's them also saying, you know, we're showing people that we care about our customers' privacies. But I think it's generally good business anyway. Because it's for them because there is there's some recent articles coming out because this affects U.S. software. This affects U.S. services. People around the world are going, well, if you're just going to give up the keys, why should I buy your software or use your cloud service or things like that? So again, this was filed in district court on last Thursday. So again, I have a feeling this is going to go all the way to the Supreme Court. One way or the other, so it's probably going to take a while. But again, it brings in mind, you know, we've had such a huge growth in cloud computing. You know, you can host your data on Microsoft, Apple, Amazon, Google,
and
you name it,
worldwide data centers. And Google, Microsoft's actually been at the forefront of fighting back against the U.S. government and its three-letter agencies being what's the word I'm looking for? Really heavy-handed in these types of requests because I remember two or three years ago, Microsoft, even longer. This was probably like 2009, 2010. Microsoft was pushing back against the U.S. government's request for data out of one of its Irish data center. And Microsoft's essentially saying, it's over there in Ireland. It should be subject to Irish or, you know, European privacy laws. And U.S. government's like, no. You're a U.S. corporation. You need to hand that over. And Microsoft was fighting against that five or six years ago.
Five or six, I remember that one as well. So, yeah, it's true. And again, it makes good sense for these businesses. And again, you know, I think, and as they say here, I think most businesses have no problem, you know, if it's a legitimate search warrant for one legitimate thing, if it makes sense. But you also have to have the ability to, like, you know, say that, no, we're not going to give you the entire keys to the kingdom.
Right.
You know, more and more I'm reading this week, like BlackBerry is just getting roasted over the coals.
Unfortunately, they deserve it.
Yeah, and and it's from people who are normally great big fans of BlackBerry, and you know, rightly so. It's very shocking to see, especially the fact, you know, their CEO is not doing interviews, not like they're hunkering down, and you know, I'm expecting, you know, with the other bad news on their part, this could be not good for BlackBerry as well. So I think as companies, you've definitely got to get out there. And I've actually linked to a second thing that was in LinkedIn from John Battelli. He's the founder of Nuco. And it's basically, attention big companies, start outsourcing your customers' trust. And they're talking about, you know, this exact thing. Your customers are going to, you know, potentially abandon you because, you know, this is what's happening. So again, it's, you know, it's an interesting read as well. I was doing some research for this story and I happened upon this and it was a fairly recent post. And so definitely well worth a look at as well.
Yeah. I will say that about John Chen, the BlackBerry CEO, apparently shortly after he came on board, or, you know, he has answered a question about helping police and, you know, federal agencies before, and he has actually said something to the effect of, well, you know, I think it was when Tim Cook said, we're not handing you anything.
That's right.
John Chen said something along the lines of, well, you know, we don't really agree, you know, we frown upon companies like Apple who are hindering the efforts of police to do their job at the expense of, you know, criminals or something like that. Basically, he actually sounded quite happy to hand over data to the police even if it should be extremely difficult for BlackBerry to do so. And I was under the impression it would be much more difficult for them to do so than it seems to be. So I am personally extremely disappointed in BlackBerry. I am rescinding my recommendation that people try or buy the BlackBerry Priv until they change how they behave. And until then, go get an Android device or an iOS device, put on Signal or WhatsApp and use that for your messaging, because it is completely encrypted end-to-end, despite the fact that WhatsApp is owned by Facebook. I'll overlook that, because I know that they're using the Open Signal protocol built by Open Whisper Systems, which makes the Signal app as well. And I love Signal. You're on it. I'm on it. My communications back and forth over there are completely encrypted. My encryptions with my boss are completely encrypted. I really like it. It's just nice to know that I can speak somewhat freely with people I know personally without having to wonder about, you know, somebody just grabbing my phone being like, oh, look, here's all your texts. That's not happening.
Yep. No, exactly. So, so as I said, we'll see what happens. So, okay, let's move on to our local story. This may actually, you know, maybe one day I'll get my dream of being able to drive a Porsche 911.
it could be a lot easier.
Could be a lot easier, and it's legal. It doesn't involve me quote unquote borrowing one.
Right. Yeah. So, Turo, which is based in San Francisco, but they offer a peer-to-peer car sharing service. So you go on the website, need a car, you can actually, if people have listed their Teslas or Porsches or Toyotas, you can actually, you know, rent the car for a little bit, put it back where it was, and everybody benefits. You get access to a car that you suddenly needed, all of a sudden. I get to lend out my car, which is sitting in a parking lot all day, not doing anything, not earning me any money, and make a little bit of cash back. And I think it's great. I actually have something to contribute to the quote-unquote sharing economy.
Exactly. Now, so the services has launched in Canada. I'm just on the site now. And the closest car right now is in West End, Kitchener. There's a Volkswagen Tiguan for $72 a day.
Tiguan.
Tiguan. Okay. Well, you know, whatever.
Tigu.
Yep.
Tiguan.
But yeah, there's a few in Toronto, even a couple of pickup trucks, like some nice looking pickup trucks in Toronto.
Don't be surprised if a 2007 red Toyota Yaris shows up pretty soon.
There you go. Yeah, a Mercedes-Benz. So again, just to start. But yeah, this is a great idea, as you say, for people if it sits in the parking lot most of the time. Most importantly, they've got some major insurance companies, Bel Air Direct and Intact Insurance, on board with this. So this isn't like, you know, an Uber where there's still a lot of controversy and stuff like that. So
just lending somebody in my car.
Yep, $2 million liability insurance. Let's see, three provinces is already in. Apparently, a U.S. Turo host makes on average $600 a month. So, you know, hey, there you go.
Yeah, the sharing. Nice thing for existing Intact insurance, Novex insurance, Jetco, and Bel Air is your Turo is actually partnered up with that large insurance company, because that's, I think that's all under the same
they're all the company. Same thing, yeah.
To get this covered under your existing insurance. So that's awesome. That's a lot of Canadians already covered by something like this.
Exactly.
So, when State Farm and some other few, and you know, of course, the mutuals get on board, you'll have a good portion of the population who can actually rent out their car.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what as this grows, how the big car rental companies deal with this.
Oh, I'm sure they're freaking out.
Have it. Yeah. But again, it shouldn't be surprising to anyone.
Yeah, I will say similarly, Zipcar has actually started offering business memberships. So for like $30 or $40 a month, your business can actually get a Zipcar membership. And therefore, anybody from the business can just pick up a Zipcar, go do what they need to do, bring it back. So that, I'm pretty sure that launched recently in Canada as well.
Cool.
And that's something I'm looking at for where I work, because every once in a while we need a rental, and I think that would be cheaper than going to Enterprise every time or having to present the company credit card, which does not have my name on it, because it's not my credit card. It's really silly. So that should help disrupt that sort of arcane model of like, well, that's fine, you have a company credit card, but where's your name on this? Like, sorry, we don't have 10 cardholders. Like,
exactly. Yeah, exactly. It makes a lot of sense. All right. So stuff we like. So the stuff I like this week is actually a story that came out of The Guardian from my namesake, who oftentimes gets confused with me, Dr. Stuart Clark. Basically, and those, you know, the certain people in the astronomy world will recognize this. About 40 years ago, there was a astronomer using Ohio State University's Big Ear radio telescope doing like a SETI search for extraterrestrial civilizations or stuff like that. He basically, in 77, he pointed towards a grouping of stars called Chi Sagittarii on the 15th of August. For 72 seconds, he received a huge, powerful blast of radio waves. What's famous about this is they have the printouts of this. He circled that and went, wow, because it was so unusual. So, they analyzed it and went, well, there's certainly something, you know, different about it. The problem is they could never find it again. They kept looking, and so on. So an astrophysicist, Antonio Paris of St. Petersburg College, thinks he has a theory. Basically, he's discovered that during that time, there's actually a couple of large comets going through that area. But what's interesting is the comets often have clouds of hydrogen that can be millions of kilometers in diameters around those comets. Now, what's interesting is the signal, original signal was at 1420 megahertz, which if you're a SETI and a radio astronomer and a chemistry guy or girl, hydrogen naturally emits radio waves at that frequency. So he's published it, but he wants to try and prove it now. So what he's hoping to do is there's two comets that are scheduled to pass the ones that star group again on the 25th of January in 2017 and the 7th of January 2018. So he started a crowdfunding campaign because he needs to raise $13,000. He needs to either buy time on a radio telescope or buy a radio telescope to make the observation and prove it. So yeah, I had a look at the report. You know, it's one of those things that kind of makes sense. How come no one thought about it before? But it's neat. Again, if it's, you know, if he doesn't find anything, then we still are left in the dark. But if, you know, if it does, at least we have that one solved. And that might help the SETI people narrow things. Okay, what not to look for. Yeah. So, again, just a kind of a neat little story. And you go, how come I didn't think of that?
I'm sure many scientists, astrophysicists, et cetera, are thinking that question right now. And
well, exactly.
If they come up with an answer, good for them. If not, well, that's okay. We're still moving forward, and science is doing exactly, it's working exactly the way it should.
That's right, because science is awesome. Just remember that, kids. Okay, what do you got, Derek?
I have Quiver. This does not need a very long explanation. Basically, Quiver is a Dropbox and Box type service, file storage, file sharing, you know, put your photos, your videos, your music, your super important documents, etc. on the service. However, a little bit of a twist. One, the interface has been very clearly designed to be as easy as possible to use. Sharing files is very easy. Sharing files for limited amounts of time or only with certain people is extremely easy. So it's a very nice, colorful interface. Which certainly sets the design apart from other services. And one of the best parts for someone like you or I, Stuart, is that the free version gives you 100 gigabytes for free.
That's awesome.
It is awesome in terms of what you get with that. For free, you get up to 500 protected files, a bunch of sharing features, with the ability to revoke access in real time. You can also integrate with some third-party applications. There are free native apps for Windows, macOS, Android, iOS, potentially some other platforms. There's actually a built-in file editor called QNote. And you get offline file access, the syncing and all that. You also get some basic versioning, et cetera, et cetera. Cool. If you decide to pay, the prices are actually really reasonable. I'm looking at euros, unfortunately, right now. But so 5 euros and 37 cents. which is about probably about $8 a month for the standard.
Mm-hmm.
Still 100 gigs, but now you actually start getting some admin controls, a control panel. You can set up a group account, custom reports, unlimited protected files, and things kind of escalate from there to the Plus account and then to Enterprise.
Yeah, yeah, it's $5. It says $5.37. That may be US.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry. That was the dollar sign, but that's the US. So you're still looking at seven something, which is actually, I'd say that's really affordable.
That's really reasonable, especially when you want to have those easy ways to share files.
Yeah, for the year, that's less than $50 a month US. So you're probably looking at about, with the dollar the way it is right now, maybe $60.
Yeah, it's not bad.
100 gigabytes and, you know, some really granular controls. So, yeah, just came across this today. Really a great-looking site, great-looking service so far. Check that out, quiver.net.
Excellent. And, of course, but wait, there's still more.
Oh, sorry.
Still more. You forgot about the important thing. If you have a Dropbox or Box account, what happens when you have that?
Yeah, so if you connect your Dropbox or Box account, I have both, so I'm going to see if I can induce a black hole here. You get a standard subscription for 6 months for free. So the initial features I mentioned after the free version, unlimited protected files, custom reports, group account, etc., you get those for free for 6 months. Good way to let you try it out, hopefully get you hooked, obviously, and try to get you to pay. But if you really don't want to pay, well, you can still get most of what you need, I suspect, on a personal basis, completely for free.
Yep, exactly. No, it looks like, they're definitely a good company from what I'm reading down here. I'm going to read a little bit more about it. But, yeah, it's something I've just signed up for an account. I'm gonna play around with it as well. So it looks really, really good.
Yeah.
Okay, so an awesome quick show today. Again, I'm glad hopefully everyone appreciates our exciting news and our brand-new sponsor. We'll be, again, filling some more things in. We'll probably hopefully see some changes to the websites in next little while. Did you want to mention our exciting Google Play announcement, Derek, before we sign off?
So Google Play Music has obviously been available for quite a long time. Over the last 6 months or so, they've been accepting podcast submissions. And I'm very happy to let you know that as of 2 days ago, Google Play Music on the web is available. Well, the podcasts are now available in the U.S. and Canada, including the Canadian Tech Podcast, because we got in there nice and early.
There you go. So there's no excuse, all you Android folks.
Yes.
You can now listen to us. We don't want to hear the excuses. If you're on a BlackBerry, it means you got to switch.
Well, yes, clearly. That is absolutely the solution at this point.
That's it. Exactly. So,
so it's on the web now, rolling out to Android over the next couple of weeks. So
right.
It'll definitely be there soon.
Okay, cool. All right, so that'll be it for this week. So for the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 68 for Wednesday, April 20th, 2016, my name is still Stuart Clark.
And I'm Derek Silva.
Thank you and be well.